you on the World Talk Radio Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit worldtalkradio.com. The World Talk Radio Network, where the world comes to talk. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the World Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show. I'm glad you're joining us today. We've got a very interesting program, which I think many of us can relate to. As a cancer survivor myself, I wanted to understand all I possibly could about this devastating disease. So much of what happens to us during the diagnosis and treatment of cancer is very anxiety-producing. So I was taking a psychopathology course and decided I was going to do research about this to try to understand about cancer and anxiety. So I researched and I found Dr. Sarah Rausch from the Moffitt Cancer Center to be my guest and to discuss this topic. So let me tell you something about her. She earned her PhD degree from Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. She is the reviewer for and is published in a variety of medical and psychological journals. She's been involved in research since 2003. She's got experience of working with those who have anxiety and have been diagnosed with cancer. So that tells you all about her. So welcome, Dr. Rausch, and thank you for agreeing to be my guest today.
Thank you, Dr. Melanie. It's both an honor and a pleasure to be with you.
Well, good. So let me remind our listeners that at the end of the program, if we have the time, we invite you to call in with your questions and comments. But if we run out of time, then they can email those to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com, and I will forward them on to Dr. Rausch. Okay? All right. So let's start with some interesting things. Can you tell us, Dr. Rausch, for our listeners, how did you become interested in the field of psychology and research?
Absolutely. I had always been interested in the power of the mind as a component of physical health. And before I had actually began my career, I was involved in international nonprofit and did a lot of volunteer work. And so I was exposed to many other systems of medicine during my international travel. For instance, in India, in the hospitals there, the Ayurvedic system of medicine, while I was in villages in China, the Chinese medicine, and small villages in Thailand, their system of medicine. And what I noticed in all of these other systems of medicine, which are thousands of years old, that both diagnosis and treatment of disease involved also diagnosis of one's mental state, the resources of their mind, their spiritual state of being, and really saw that mind-body connection and whole person component. And so with all of that, I began to become more and more interested from the Western scientific point of view why this worked. What were the mechanisms? What were the chemicals? What were the cells involved? Which nerves? Exactly how all of this worked in the mind-body connection. And so I began to research it and be able to define to medical professionals and in scientific terms exactly how this mind-body connection works for physical health.
Wow, it sounds very interesting. And do they do this kind of research in other countries, or are you the innovative person starting this kind of thing?
There has been research in other countries for very long periods of time, but the research hadn't met are Western scientific criteria. So there are a lot of, for instance, case reports of mind-body techniques being able to help manage disease or cure disease, and a lot of integrative techniques being able to help manage and cure different diseases. But when we look at these articles and these scientific studies now with our Western eyes under a microscope, they weren't done to the rigor that we require here in the Western medical community. And the reason we have such rigor is so that we can then use it in medical treatment. And mm-hmm. so we won't implement a treatment or a mind-body therapy unless the science is there with great rigor. And so the studies were done previously, but not to our Western scientific standards.
Well, it's great that you're doing this, and perhaps there can be a blending of what Eastern techniques are used with the Western techniques and help all of us to learn from one another.
Absolutely. There are thousands of years of wisdom from Western medicine, Eastern medicine, and just better understanding the power of the mind. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so many people are now using alternative health methods in addition to what is traditionally done. So people are very interested in what's out there, I know.
Yeah, you know, in the general population, about 40% of the population report, and that number might be higher, but 40% report using these therapies along with medical care. When we mm-hmm. talk about specific populations like cancer patients, that number jumps up to almost 90%.
Wow. And I know a lot of people don't want to admit to their oncologist that they're using some alternative methods for fear that they'll be chastised or say, you can't do that.
Absolutely. Or thinking maybe my provider doesn't care or it's not within their domain of practice or this is private. This is mm-hmm. what I do in my private life. So absolutely a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to Moffitt Cancer Center?
I was practicing at the world-renowned Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and I had always been aware of the comprehensive cancer care that's delivered here at the Moffitt Cancer Center in Florida, even from Minnesota. And there are several reasons. One is there are world-renowned researchers here that I had always been aware of, like Dr. Paul Jacobson has traveled nationally and internationally talking about the importance of quality of life in cancer care. Dr. Nagi Kumar has been at the forefront of researching nutrition and nutraceuticals, the active ingredients in food which help fight cancer. So there were many very, very impressive researchers here, but I also saw the clinical care in a cancer center where the only thing being treated is cancer can really focus on head-to-toe, mind-body, spiritual care of the patient, and they walk the talk here. They really and truly have a multidisciplinary team with surgery and experts in chemotherapy and experts in radiation, but also nutritionists and psychologists and psychiatrists and spiritual care and palliative care and massage therapists and acupuncturists. And as I was practicing clinical psychology at the Mayo Clinic with all of these things incorporated into my own practice, an opportunity came up at Moffitt in which they said, we have this whole department of supportive services and integrative care. That's a separate department, and that's really where you could just focus your time
wow.
and energy. And it was an amazing opportunity.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Absolutely.
Our topic today, specifically related to the cancer, is anxiety and cancer. And to me, they're connected. Do you agree with that, that most people who get the cancer diagnosis have some form of anxiety?
Absolutely. Diagnosis of cancer is a very stressful life event. Not everyone reacts to stressors in life with the same response. But of course, I see anxiety as a continuum from, oh, this is stressful, I'm a little worried, what will I do about work, what will I do about finances, to severe anxiety that maybe interferes with someone's daily life. And I think all of us experience something on that continuum at some point in our lives, especially when faced with a major stressor like a diagnosis of cancer.
Can you explain to the listening audience what the quality of life index is? Because I think that would help with this topic of anxiety to explain some things.
Sure. We often refer to quality of life in the medical community as one factor that we take as very important when we consider treatment outcomes. So we will ask a patient, you know, how is your pain? How is your nausea? How is your digestion? How is your quality of life? And what this really is referring to is a patient's well-being. And we often think of it as one large domain, but it encompasses emotional well-being, physical well-being, functional well-being. Can I get done everything I need to get done in my day or in my life? Sexual well-being, cancer-specific well-being, spiritual well-being. And so it's very important for a healthcare provider or to know this, especially about a patient going through cancer and cancer treatment, so that no areas are really left untreated and that we really address all of these issues. Again, like I said, from head to toe, the cancer is treated and either removed or reduced, and that these other areas are treated. And now this is seen as side by side with medical treatment that we're also treating quality of life. In some situations with cancer patients, individual patient's quality of life can actually determine which treatment they will get.
It
can have that much importance in a patient's life and medical decision making.
Do you measure somebody's quality of life index prior to treatment and then later to see if it has changed with
the
treatment?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so quality of life is usually measured by a questionnaire that's given to the patient, and so the patient will answer for themselves, how do I rate my emotional well-being, how do I rate my physical well-being, functional well-being, and so on. And we will often follow that throughout cancer treatment, cancer survivorship, and thereafter, so that we can really see how these treatments, how the symptoms and side effects are impacting a patient's life. And unfortunately, cancer never happens in a vacuum. Patients always have so many other things going on in their life that we also need to take into consideration as they are being treated, recovering from, and managing survivorship.
And I've noticed that some people who could have a situation are going to handle it entirely different than someone else who might have a worse situation.
Absolutely. There are so many factors which can play a role in an individual's reaction to a stressful situation like a diagnosis or treatment of cancer. And many of those are individual and come from a person's upbringing and their past history with coping with stressful events. But some of the other factors also include their prognosis, their diagnosis, how severe their diagnosis is, what their past history with cancer would be. So if they have friends or family who have gone through a cancer diagnosis and have done either quite well or quite poorly, patients whose only experience with cancer might be a friend who is now deceased from cancer would have a very different reaction often than someone whose only experience is someone who had treatment and did exceptionally well. And so a lot of these play quite a significant role in determining whether or not it will affect a person's anxiety or distress level.
And I've noticed people who had anxiety prior to ever getting a diagnosis, sometimes now that they have a real thing to focus on, their anxiety level might even go down, and for others it's going to exacerbate it and make it much higher. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, if a patient has a past history of anxiety, and when I refer to anxiety, I'm really referring to anxiety symptoms, not necessarily a medical diagnosis of an anxiety disorder. We'd almost consider that a patient at high risk for anxiety, just like if you're going in for heart disease and you have a past history, you're already at high risk. Uh-huh. So obviously all of this is very individualistic, but having a past history would put someone at high risk of experiencing anxiety again. And if you just imagine going through any major life stressor, they would be at high risk for the anxiety manifesting itself or becoming more intense. So we consider that patient at high risk and therefore are certain to treat them, are certain to follow them closely to make sure that it's not interfering with their life and to make sure that it's managed quite
well. Okay, well, it's time for us to go to a break, so we'll do that and we'll come back and talk some more. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Listen. The world is talking. The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
If you are a parent of a child with autism, you know that there can be day-to-day struggles emotionally. Now you can share insights and outlooks with the Mother Cub Show. Your host, Susan Lynn Perry, a parent of a child with autism, will bring a new perspective to the subject, from diagnosis to effective treatments that are working. Her guests will include professionals, authors, and individuals that will bring wonder and hope to the world of autism. Tune in to the Mother Cub Show, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
I have a dream.
Sometimes it seems that life is just throwing you one obstacle after another. There are many people who have overcome or are overcoming their personal obstacles in order to succeed. Hear them talk about these barriers and how they overcame them on American Dreams, The Sky is the Limit, featuring host Jen Robertson. Jen herself overcame life struggles to become one of the most in-demand motivational speakers in the world today, as well as a best-selling author. Tune in to American Dreams, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel. People are looking for hands-on alternatives to conventional psychotherapy. Long-term therapy and medications to treat depression and anxiety are no longer the only answer. Tune in to Holistic Answers to Mental Health with your host, Aileen Neely. Let Aileen show you the techniques of energy psychology. You'll learn some of the more effective methods being used to treat stress, anxiety, marital issues, infertility, and empowerment. Listen every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel. You're listening to the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show. My guest today is Dr. Sarah Rausch from the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. And before the break, we were talking about the whole topic of anxiety. And the next question I have is, I wonder if anxiety is gender specific. Is it more prone to females or males or age, or is there anything that you can tell us about that?
Now, this is a very interesting question. There, in the scientific literature, in the general public, anxiety is more common in young women. However, we also see that anxiety manifests itself differently in men and women, just as it manifests itself differently in different cultures. and with different family histories and different abilities to cope. So when some people are anxious, they might get a stomach ache or sore muscles or migraines and really hold it in their body and maybe haven't quite made a connection that this is anxiety. Women tend to have more of a cognitive or a mental reaction in responding to anxiety, if I were to generalize, and so tend to experience more of the nervous, tense, anxious, worry, thinking things through a lot, being able to talk about it. So although in the general public, anxiety is more common in young women, and women generally feel more comfortable talking about anxiety symptoms, there are some differences in how it manifests. And so I think also being aware that, you know, under stress in general, how do I react? Do I tend to hold symptoms more physically, or do I tend to think it through more? Those could both be anxiety, even though it's coming up in a physical symptom.
Well, I know that in some of the research I read about men who had cancer, testosterone cancer, I think, perhaps it was prostate cancer, but anyway, they showed more signs of using humor as a way to deal with their anxiety.
Yes, and that's a very good point, Dr. Melanie. Very different systems of coping between men and women. And all of the research, we consistently find men and women cope differently. Men also tend to, again, if we were to generalize, of course everyone's an individual, but men also tend to use what's called problem-focused coping, or how do I address this? How do I solve it? What do I need to do? And so some of their thought processes or some of their coping techniques also tend to focus on problem solving, whereas women may focus more commonly on what we call emotion-focused coping, or things that'll make me feel good. So that's another difference we see in the literature about coping.
Do you find if you have support groups for people that it's more prone for the women to come to them more than the men to deal with their issues?
In general, a general cancer support group has been more populated by women. However, there are a lot of man-only cancer support groups. For instance, Moffitt has a man-to-man prostate cancer support group and a Men's Day general support group for all the other types of cancers. And they are much more populated, I think, you know, for both men and women. Cancers in different parts of the body are very private. So prostate cancer, which is the most common in men, is also a very private experience to be talking about sexual function or any type of symptoms or side effects from prostate cancer. And so I think it's understandable that the gender-specific support groups might be more populated.
Okay. Are there certain types of treatment that are more prone to have side effects that are going to increase anxiety, like certain medications, chemotherapy, radiation?
Some of the cancer treatments also involve other medications, maybe not just used for cancer. For instance, some patients will be taking different types of steroids. And steroids do increase anxiety and sometimes produce symptoms that feel like anxiety, like maybe an increased respiratory rate, which would be fast breathing, or feeling time pressured. So when people are on high doses of these corticosteroids, they might feel like they have to get everything done in the day and think very quickly. That's a common side effect of the steroids. Some chemotherapies in the scientific literature have been shown to increase anxiety, but there's other reports that say in a randomized controlled trial, there's no difference in groups who've had chemotherapy and groups who have not. Certainly, there are increases in symptoms of anxiety with caffeine, although not a drug-specific, a prescription drug or a cancer-related drug, so caffeine definitely will increase symptoms. Lack of sleep can increase symptoms. In commonly used in breast cancer, aromatase inhibitors, and increase or magnify symptoms that are already there. And patients beginning or initiating antidepressants, often for a week or two, might have symptoms of anxiety, and that's a known side effect. And antidepressants are used in cancer treatment often for many indications, so one for mood, but also for things like hot flashes. So they're a widespread medication that are used for many indications, so I think sometimes people don't always pay as much attention to the symptoms and side effects if they're not using it for the main indication of that drug.
And some antidepressants also help with pain management also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And neuropathy and nausea sometimes. So used for a lot of different uses in cancer care.
Well, do you find that people are generally more anxious waiting for the test results to come back rather than when they're actually told you do have cancer?
In my experience, it depends a lot on the individual's beliefs and their past experiences with cancer. So for some, the diagnosis might be not the worst thing in the world, and for some, it might be the worst thing in the world. So I think a lot of that has to do with past experience. Throughout the cancer trajectory, there are a lot of known major triggers for anxiety. Diagnosis is one of them. Starting treatment is one. Finishing treatment. Imagine being under the care of physicians and nurses and lab techs and supportive services, and then all of a sudden you're sent home with without a whole team checking in on you every week. And certainly waiting for test results is a very large trigger for anxiety. And any change in physical functioning, whether or not that's from surgery or from cancer or from survivorship, just any change in physical functioning. So those are the big ones where we really keep a close eye out for anxiety reactions, try and help patients manage. We know waiting for test results will often cause anxiety, and so we really help patients at those periods in time to help manage anxiety symptoms.
And for me, I wasn't able to have the chemotherapy, and so not knowing what should I expect, because all the literature tells you what to expect from side effects and protocol of what you should expect, and not there's nothing in the literature that I found that tells people what to do if you can't have the traditional methods. So is there anything written out there for those people like me who have had to do it a different route?
Yeah, that's such a good point, and such a very large gap in the science. And we do know that the unknown or not knowing is one of the largest components of anxiety. Not having control and just not knowing are two of the largest components in anxiety. So specifically for those patients, you know, who are not eligible for treatment for some other reason, certainly would fall into those domains. Absolutely.
Well, maybe that's an area of research that Moffitt can look into.
Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Go ahead.
Go right ahead.
I was going to say, can you tell us what kinds of research you're doing now at Moffitt or that you're involved in?
My research focuses primarily on the integrative therapies or the non-medication-based therapies and how they interact with cancer treatments, how they help patients manage the symptoms and side effects of treatment, and how they also very specifically affect immune function in patients. So, for instance, we just finished a 7-year study of Tai Chi for women with breast cancer and looked at how Tai Chi intervention or stress management, helping patients manage stress through something like Tai Chi, could help their immune system during and after chemotherapy. And what we found in that study was a change in immune function, but also patients were feeling much better taken care of. They had greater reductions in stress, anxiety, depression. They called their nurses much less for stress-related issues, and mm-hmm. they also had lower rates of infection when they were better managing their stress levels. So that's one study. We do a lot of research here at Moffitt also on other integrative therapies like massage therapy for hospitalized cancer patients in managing pain, acupuncture for neuropathy and pain, looking at how complementary and alternative therapies are used by patients going through cancer treatment and how frequently they tell their physicians. There are a lot of therapies that interact with cancer treatment, and so we also want to know whether patients are telling their providers, and if not, why? Maybe because they feel it's private or just feel their physicians wouldn't care. There's a large department of research also looking at the nutraceuticals or the active ingredients in food that fight cancer. So things like the lycopene in tomatoes or the active ingredients in turmeric and how those interact with cancer. So we're looking at all of these and how they affect both quality of life and the medical outcomes.
I think from what I've read and learned is the whole body approach and being a participant in the healthcare team, you don't feel like you're a specimen that's being worked over. When you're doing some of these complementary things, you feel like, you know, I'm part of this.
Absolutely. And that patients do have some control, that there is something that they can control throughout this trajectory. So often when patients are hospitalized or simply undergoing treatment, it feels like such a loss of control in so many domains of their life, that cancer has control or this treatment has control or the physicians have control. So it also really gives back some empowerment to the patients.
Okay, it's time for us to go to a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel, where the world comes to talk.
If you are looking to get started or are currently operating a home-based business, you might be looking for answers. What are the risks? What business should I get started in? How will I market my business? How do I balance my professional life with my other life? For answers, you need to tune into the Home-Based Business Show with Helene Liotzos. Each week, we'll bring you a step-by-step practical guide to starting and maintaining your home-based business. Listen every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
Are you a student? Maybe you've just started going back to school or are thinking about it. If you're interested in adult education, tune in to Learning as an Adult with your host, John Steele. Our program will cover topics you can use if you're a current or future student in any learning environment. You can be learning online or in a classroom. Either way, John will help you with problems, issues, and concerns facing students every single day. Tune in to Learning as an Adult with John Steele every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
The chances are very high that you know a twin. More than two people in every 100 are born a twin or multiple. Society has sensationalized, revered, and even feared twinship. If you are a twin, want to be a twin, or have a twin within your close personal relationships, tune into Twin Talk with Dr. Mercy Runyon. You will learn about the mysteries and secrets shared between and about twins. These topics include stages of development, psychic experiences, health and relationships. Twin Talk, Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Hello, welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show. Today, my guest host is Dr. Sarah Rausch from the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. And we're talking about cancer and anxiety. And we've covered a lot of areas, but I want to get to some specifics about if you know that a person who is diagnosed with cancer comes in with an anxiety disorder, what kind of things do you do differently with that individual as compared to one that you do not see evidence of anxiety?
That's a very good question. What I tend to do is understanding a patient coming in with a comorbid diagnosis, like an anxiety disorder, is treated as important as a comorbid diagnosis of heart disease. And so I would make sure and assess with the medical team that the patient is well managed and how well managed they are as they're coming in. And we want to make sure that the patient's anxiety disorder is well taken care of, hopefully before initiation of any cancer treatment. We do know that patients going through medical treatment with an anxiety disorder or a clinically concerning issue with anxiety can have a lot of difficulties with treatment, with compliance, with sleep, which in turn can affect immune function and recovery. And so we want to make sure that a patient is very well managed and taken care of before initiating cancer treatment. So that might involve a thorough assessment of their symptoms and how severe they interfere with the patient's life and medical treatment. Might involve medication, might involve psychotherapy or supportive services with a social worker or a psychotherapist. Might involve simply teaching relaxation techniques so the patient can better manage their symptoms. And then, of course, we would follow the patient throughout every stage of treatment and recovery to make sure that they are well managed and that they're able to manage with these anxiety symptoms everything else that is involved with their medical treatment.
If the person comes to you from another location and they have a psychotherapist back where they're from, do you communicate with that psychotherapist so that it's a team effort?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it depends how long a patient is here. We can consider ourselves temporarily filling in while the patient is away from their psychotherapist, or often a patient can work over the telephone or work through long distance with their existing relationship with that therapist.
Okay. Would you explain to our listening audience who may not have a medical background what the term comorbid condition means? Because they might think that means two things that might cause you to die. So can you explain that?
Sure. So when someone comes in with a comorbid diagnosis, and what I mean by that is they're coming in for cancer treatment, but they have something else going on with their health. And we do consider an anxiety disorder a medical diagnosis, and we treat
good.
So it would be something else going on with their health that we also need to manage and treat along with their cancer.
Okay, sounds good.
And make sure that whatever medical treatment, whatever supportive treatments are also, for instance, some medications may need to be changed or may need to be increased throughout cancer treatment. So also making sure that we do it together in one comprehensive treatment plan.
Good. Would you make alterations in perhaps if somebody was claustrophobic and had an anxiety attack? Do you have like an open MRI that could be used instead of, or a sedation to deal with that?
There are a lot of different options that can be accommodated when a medical team does become aware of something like an anxiety disorder or discomfort even. So we always tell patients to speak to their medical provider about the various options for each specific aspect of treatment. For instance, we have psychologists and relaxation therapists who go into radiation clinics and teach relaxation to patients before radiation. Sometimes it is the actual treatment that's modified, like having sedation or a different technique. And sometimes it's helping a patient prepare so that they feel they have the skills and the tools to get through the next step of treatment.
Wow. Very good. Who is the person, the point person, that would assess or diagnose a patient coming in is anxious? Who on the team is responsible?
The answer is everybody.
Okay.
The correct answer is everybody. So when a patient comes in for care, for cancer care, really and truly everybody on the team is responsible, because a patient may not see the physician every single time. They may have nurse visits. The patient may not see a psychologist or a psychiatrist unless they ask for it or unless they're referred by a physician. So what I always tell patients is they are the captain of their healthcare ship. And so they really need to guide that ship and make sure that they are well taken care of in body, mind, and spirit. We hope that every healthcare provider would be aware of these things and trained and would give the appropriate referral. But those providers are also, their job as an oncologist or as a surgeon or as a radiation therapist is to really treat that cancer and do what they do best. So an oncologist does best treating the cancer, and a surgeon does best cutting out cancer, and a radiation therapist does best. So, you know, there may be situations where they don't pick it up, or where they may not recognize the symptoms in that particular individual because they might be different than our textbook symptoms. So really I encourage patients to always speak up, always talk to your nurse, always talk to your physician, your healthcare provider, your primary care provider, and make sure that they're aware if you're uncomfortable, if you're anxious, if you're worried, if you have an anxiety disorder, a family history, a past history, so that your care really can be tailored to you and personalized for what's best for you as an individual patient.
Whose responsibility is it to continually keep everybody on the same page? In other words, updating the skills and assessment for all of the team to, you know, if there's something, a new symptom or a new way to recognize the anxiety, who at Moffitt is in charge of training everybody to keep them up to date on these observations and assessing of the anxiety?
At Moffitt, we're fortunate that we have such a large cancer center. We have a whole division of psychosocial care with psychologists, psychiatrists, and social workers. And so that team within psychosocial care would be responsible for the updates, the continuing education, the new tools, the new assessments, new programs. And we're very active as a psychosocial team here at Moffitt. And fortunately, also, Moffitt is such a proponent of multidisciplinary care. So we often have continuing education seminars that will involve physicians and nurses from every specialty, the surgery specialty, the oncology specialty, the radiation, the palliative care. And so we have these multidisciplinary team conferences and education conferences where everyone is represented.
Can you explain what palliative care is? Because some of our listeners may not understand that term.
Sure. And palliative care is making sure that patients are comfortable. And so it might involve pain management, and it might involve end-of-life care. So palliative care's sole purpose is helping the patient with comfort and managing symptoms and side effects of cancer.
Okay. So when somebody comes to Moffitt, what could they expect? How can you explain to lessen their anxiety should they decide to come? Can you kind of give them a rundown of what would happen to them?
Absolutely. When you come in to a Moffitt, which is a large, multidisciplinary, comprehensive care setting, for a diagnosis, you will have a primary oncologist, almost like a primary manager, who specializes in your particular disease. So a patient coming in for prostate cancer would come in to the that clinic. A patient with breast cancer would come into the women's clinic. A patient with stomach cancer would come into the GI clinic. So you would have an oncologist or someone to manage your care who specializes in your particular diagnosis. And that person will then decide who else should be on this team. Where else could this patient benefit? So it might involve a conversation with a surgeon. It might involve a conversation with nutrition. It might involve a conversation with someone who specializes in pain management. It might involve a specialist in radiation, chemotherapy, depending on your particular diagnosis, your preferences and beliefs, and what would be best. And so you'll have one kind of primary manager who will coordinate the care with all of the other teams. And then, of course, a patient can always request supportive services. A physician can refer for supportive services. So things like massage and acupuncture or pastoral care, spiritual care, psychotherapy, or just stress management. We have yoga classes, Tai Chi classes for cancer patients. And so all of those are also available to patients so that we are ensure that they are being treated with mind, body.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go to our break and we'll wrap it up when we come back. Thank you.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel, where the world comes to listen and talk.
Can you think of anybody who does not want a better life and to be a better person? Think about that for a second. Almost everyone wants to be better, but how does one go about doing that? One thing that is making people better every week is tuning in to the Self-Improvement Show with Dr. Irene Conlon. All real change comes from within, but many of us don't know where to find the information or guidance we need to make the changes that bring about the improvement. Most of us don't know how to work within. Listen Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on World Talk Radio Variety.
Life navigation sounds simple enough, but it is really about harnessing the power of your own intuition to focus on the positive things in your life rather than the negative. Host Augustina Torgelson will help you to lead a happier life with less stress. Augustina's vision is to see a world of one community living in harmony with nature and earth. Embark on the journey of self-exploration and new opportunities. Tune in to Life Navigation every Tuesday at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
Listen.
Listen.
The world is talking. The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Hello, welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show. My guest today is Dr. Sarah Rausch from Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. And we're talking about cancer and anxiety. And I'm curious to understand, Dr. Rausch, what's so unique about Moffitt as compared to other cancer centers?
Moffitt is the only cancer center in Florida that has been designated as a comprehensive cancer center by the National Cancer Institute, which is a branch of the federal government. And what that means is that we really are, like I said earlier, walking the talk. Patients are provided comprehensive care, meaning all of the different specialties from head to toe are covered with supportive services, integrative medicine specialists, nutrition specialists, pastoral care, alongside with the cutting-edge treatments for cancer. The other aspect that makes Moffitt unique is we also are a research institute. And so There are over $83 million in grant funding from research taking place at Moffitt so that all the newest treatments and all the newest findings in cancer care are here. And therefore, we're also able to get that to our medical providers quicker. For instance, Dr. Giuliano was one of the first researchers looking at the HPV vaccine, which is the vaccine to help prevent cervical cancer. And that was right here. A lot of the first research on lycopene and curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric, right here. Some of the first research in comprehensive care. Why is it important to consider things like anxiety, depression, and quality of life in medical outcomes all took place here. And so having a research institute also is such a great asset to a cancer center because that means you have the newest knowledge right here in your backyard.
So where do the grants come from?
A lot of different sources. Individual researchers come up with an idea of what they want to investigate or what they want to research, and they submit proposals and explaining why this would be new, why this is important, and how they would go about doing it to places like the American Cancer Society, the National Cancer Institute, and private foundations. Most of these grants are peer-reviewed, so that means there's a big panel of experts that say this is worthy or not worthy. And so it's also a great accomplishment for the Moffitt researchers to be receiving this much in grant funding. It means we have some of the best researchers in the world.
Wonderful. Do you bring people in from other countries to teach people at Moffitt, or is it just your research of having gone to these places is what comes in and helps?
We do bring researchers in from all over the world who are leaders in their field, and we have several seminars. Moffitt holds a weekly scientific seminar in which we bring someone in from anywhere in the world who is a leading expert in their field to come and educate the providers here and the researchers here on what is the newest, what is the latest and greatest about that specific aspect of cancer care.
Well, that's very encouraging and lessening of anxiety to know that you're on that cutting edge.
Absolutely.
Back to specifics. When a patient is first told that they have cancer, is there a set way that you do that? Is there, you know, you only give so many details? Is there a set regimen as to how that is done, or is it individual?
For the most part, it's individual. However, within medical schools and residency training, there's been a large shift in how that is approached. So from the very beginning, medical doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists are trained in open and honest communication, compassion and understanding. And now in medical schools, in order to get through the first year of medical school and in order to get through the first year of residency, patients have to practice breaking bad news and having difficult conversations with actors or with peers. And so this is a large part of medical training now.
I would like to send a few physicians that need that brush up work. That would be very helpful.
You want your surgeon to simply be a good surgeon. Having good communication would be also absolutely wonderful.
It would. Can physicians around the country, oncologists, come to Moffitt for training? Is that available?
Yeah, there's a lot of different programs, you know, depending on their specialty. There are fellowships and trainings and visiting professors, visiting physicians to come and learn from and really understand. We also have a lot of cancer centers come and visit us as they are interested in becoming comprehensive cancer centers. We've had three cancer centers visit in the past year who've been interested in expanding their psychosocial services, expanding integrative medicine, expanding their psychological and psychiatric services. And so a lot of cancer centers will have a desire to expand and then come and visit us knowing that we have each of these programs and that we are designated as a comprehensive cancer center.
Well, we have a brand new cancer center here in Tallahassee, so I'm hoping that they are going to be part of that process too.
Wonderful.
So we'll see. Hope so. If a person is a regular patient with Moffitt and they have an issue that comes up after hours, how do they deal with that? What's the system for anxious patients to deal with their questions?
Most patients will have an after-hours phone number for a nurse for the that already knows them and their situation. So that would often be the first line. There is a phone number called Cancer Answers. Patients can contact 1-888-MOFFITT, M-O-F-F-I-T-T. That's available to anyone with questions regarding cancer or regarding anxiety or treatments or just about the process. So that's also available. And then we also, for patients who have access to the Internet, there's always information on the Internet at InsideMoffitt.com.
InsideMoffitt.com. Okay, that will be something very helpful to many people.
Absolutely.
Okay. The support groups that you offer, are there any that are offered for the family members?
There are. We have approximately 10 to 15 support groups at Moffitt that meet on a regular basis. There are support groups for the caregivers specifically, both here in the hospital because often caregivers are so busy taking care of their loved ones. And then we also have ongoing caregiver support groups in the community. And the American Cancer Society, and online that is cancer.org, O-R-G, is always a wonderful resource for finding a support group in your own home community, whether you live in Texas or Tennessee or Tampa, Florida. So that is a website I'd also recommend for patients to find a local support group.
Well, it's time for us to finish up our program for today. So please go to our website if you want more information. And thanks for being my guest today.
It was an honor. Thank you, Dr. Melanie.
All right, and join us next week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the World Talk Radio Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit worldtalkradio.com. The World Talk Radio Network, where the world comes to talk. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the World Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.